Hello and welcome to One Game at a Time, where this week we look at all things umpiring as we track the development of the rules and strategies that make our game the one we know and love. It's a very, very big hello and welcome to Ryan Miller. How's that handicap, mate?
Oh, you can't. That's it. No more handicap talk. That's two episodes in a row. We're not doing it anymore. This is getting offensive. Okay, we have a non-bullying policy at this podcast. I'm excited tonight, though.
Why are you excited?
Well, there's somebody else in the room, mate.
You feel like you're going to get
There is somebody else here. I thought it was just going to be me stuck with the brothers for the whole time, and then somebody else has come in. Vinny, you excited? I'm pumped, mate.
I'm absolutely pumped, Phil, because we can now finally get over this holding the ball.
You'll never be over it. No
this
one will
holding
be over it.
The ball abomination, which has been happening since 1874, and we have a man right here to my left that can finally sort this really, and sometimes blight of the game.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, before we get to the meat of the whole issue and before we find out how umpires umpire and how on earth they get to the bottom of some of the strange rules and interpretations, we go to Mailbag of Cautions, where we love that you out there take, I suppose, the initiative to criticise, encourage, or just generally comment on what we've got to say, and we take every single comment on our Twitter handle very seriously. That's at Origins of Footy. We welcome emails to originsoffooty@gmail.com. And if you're keen to hit us up on the Facebook, One Game at a Time is where you can find us. And
we want
everybody to continue to follow us, criticise us, do all those things, because it helps to shape what we're interested in, what we want to talk about, and what we want to research, because we're going to have fun anyway, I can tell you that.
We
are going to be directed and funneled by what it is that you're interested in. And Finn, what's been interesting this week to you?
I've actually got Michael working on my shoulder here. I've had Tor ask, origins of holding the ball rule, boys. Why do umpires never pay it? So, again, we will feature this during this episode, and it is from 1874, and we are going to absolutely pick it apart because there is some huge contradictions in the current rules that I'm very interested in to see how an umpire could actually adjudicate it correctly if there is a contradiction.
Yeah, and it's easy to see some of the key terms actually making sense, like why it's not called dropping the ball, for example. But we'll get to the bottom of that.
We will get to that.
And Ryan Miller, what's caught your fancy this week?
Well, I was on Twitter and I couldn't help but notice that Kieran from Watsonia popped up again. I thought he was going to have a go at Liam again.
Talk about a hard tear.
So I was excited when I saw his name. I thought he's going to get stuck into the big fella. But he was actually very complimentary this time, I think. Highlighting the fact that Liam made a point about what was going on when the game was being developed, and that Melbourne was very, very wealthy at the time. And Kieran agreed with you, and he also made an awesome point about the fact that Melbourne was being what he describes as being heavily fortified because of fear of Russian invasion. And we had a bit of a look at this, and he's absolutely on the money. It was in the Times. 1864, England was in a bit of panic because they were obviously getting a bit of money from Melbourne at that particular point. So Kieran, it was a lovely tweet. I think I prefer the ones when he gets stuck into Liam, but he makes a nice point.
And
he paints the picture for us, so I like it. But I think it's time we've got to invite. I'm excited. We've got to get our special guest in.
Yes. You should be excited. So we're honoured and pumped up to have an umpire, a real true blue umpire in our midst. He has had a distinguished career over about 13 years. He's umpired in the Northern Football League. He's umpired in the Riddle District Football League. And a hello to our listeners from the Riddle District Football League who follow us on Twitter at the moment. He's been awarded an AFL Coaches Umpiring Coach...
of the Year, some sort of award for that, Michael, is that correct?
That is correct.
And in 2015, he led a party of 20 umpires to Austin, Texas, to train Americans in how to umpire Australian rules footy. Oh, and it's a distinguished career. Jesus. Michael, thank you very much for joining us. And I suppose the obvious question is, how do you come to umpiring?
Evening, gentlemen. And thank you for having me. I'll always tell this story that I played footy. I played 150 games with the St. Mary's Junior Footy Club in Greensboro.
Greensboro, very popular club.
And it is. In fact, they boast that they're the largest junior football club in the country. Right. They weren't at the time, but that's what they say now. And in my side was two players that you may have heard of. Ben Johnson, who played for Collingwood.
Yeah, Collingwood.
And Nick Stevens.
Ben Johnson, number 32. Yeah. Was he? For Collingwood, can't remember.
And Nick Stevens, Port Adelaide, and then Carlton.
Yes.
And so they were both in my side. Mm. And so obviously I struggled to get a game with with two like that. So at the end of my junior career, I decided to pick up the whistle at 18 years of age. So in some ways I came to a bit later than others. A lot of young people start at sort of 15 with boundary umpiring, for example, but I had a little career first and moved into umpiring.
Right, and is it crazy fitness? Oh, that's what I've always seen. So tends to tie, like umpiring, you've got to run a lot. You probably should be a cross-country freak, is as far as I can get to. Is that about right with my umpiring, or is that completely wrong?
No, well, there is a fitness component at community level. That component will move based on the level of football, so... Yeah. Pretty anyone could probably umpire a game of reserves footy at community level. Mm. But certainly at AFL level, the boundary umpires, for example, many of them have, there's one current boundary umpire that's won the Stall Gift. Many of them go and do marathons. They run over 20 kilometres a game. Certainly with the introduction of three field umpires, that sort of level of fitness is sort of now around the 12, 14 kilometre mark per game. So it's still a fair effort.
Is it more, how do you train for that? Is it more sprinting? Is it more...
A lot of fartlek running, so pre-season will always involve longer running, and then as the season begins, the running becomes much shorter. And then during the middle of the year, you don't have to do too much because the game match fitness will, very much like players, you know.
Is that an annual test that you have to do, or is it just part of your accreditation, you get tested at that point? Or is it something that you have to sort of look at each year?
So all umpires across Australia need to be accredited.
Yep.
There's a level system. I think it's 1, 2, 3, levels 1, 2, and 3, 4. I think they've renamed them now, but essentially level 1 is when you begin. 2 is when you do senior community. Level 3 is at the VFL, and level 4 or at your state level. Yep. And level 4 is at the AFL.
Yep.
And so... There is that requirement, and that elapses every, I think, 5 years, and you essentially, your coach will just make sure that you're still doing the right things to be reaccredited. So it's not an awfully difficult process, but it's there.
So I've got to ask, the bounce, does it stay or does it go?
It's got to go.
Talk us through that. We're very serious traditionalists here at the table. Talk us through why.
Well, look, I'm a fan of it personally, and I was very good at it until the point that we stopped doing it around the ground.
Right.
And when that stopped, then, of course, the number of times you do it in a game dramatically dropped. And so, in fact, it made it worse because you weren't bouncing as often, so you weren't getting as much practice, and so it's fallen away a little bit. And also around the ground, you got away a little bit with how, if your bounce was a little bit off around the ground, it didn't matter because the ruckman could come from any side.
Yes.
But of course, in the middle, they're lined up and all that sort of stuff. So it makes it look worse. So I think a little bit like cricket, of course, they reduce the amount of overs that young people can bowl because of backs. We're seeing the same sort of thing now. And nearly no community level umpiring requires the bounce.
Yeah.
It's only if you're going to go further to state or national league that you're told, look, if you want to bounce to practice, you can. Yes. But I would think it'll be gone in the at AFL level. And last time I spoke to Rowan Saws, who's the current coach of the AFL umpires, he felt, not that he has any say really at all, but he said he felt there's a window and it's closing on the bounce. So.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, yeah, I wanted to say it because it was 2005 with the introduction of that 10-metre circle and offside line.
Yeah. So that second circle.
Yeah. And I think the AFL have kind of shot themselves in the back with this because they've kind of made a paradox where, yeah, we want it unbiased, so we want a bounce where it's completely unbiased and go either way, but we still want it to go kind of straight in this 10-metre circle. So there's this pressure for the umpires to actually bounce it straight now. So if you're going to bounce it straight, we'll just throw it up in the air. But prior to that, if it went either way, then that was that unbiased. If it went, 45 degrees one way, play on. That's just the way
and
it happens.
It's also eradicated that opportunity for some knucklehead in the audience to yell out, "Back to Bendigo next week, mate, if you're going to bounce it like that."
Bendigo.
Well, out to the country somewhere. Is that,
are you
going
to get stuck into James Hurd again in a minute?
If you're listening, James, so offense, man. Is it the case that umpires still get sort of punished, but they get banished?
Well, not anymore. So right up until the 80s, the AFL or the VFL at the time would supply field umpires for most of the country football leagues around Victoria. And so, in fact, if you were dropped from a VFL game, you were sent on a train, usually a train, up to Bendigo, Ballarat or Shepparton or somewhere to umpire a game of footy. And a long day, very long day for those umpires.
And you'd learn to bounce the bloody ball
and get it up straight
really quick.
But now the professionalism of the AFL umpires, they are essentially run like a footy club, although they're not full time, and that's something we certainly could discuss later on. But they essentially, there's a list, and if you're not umpiring, you're either umpiring at VFL level or your state level. We only have field umpires currently based in two states, and that's Perth and in Western Australia and Victoria, or you're sitting on the bench. So very much like a player, would either play for their second side or just not play at all.
So you're there to observe if you're not...
Yeah, you're an emergency umpire. Yeah. So.
And you're a coach of young umpires?
Yeah, so... after umpiring for about 13 years at the Northern Footy League, I got a call from the Riddle District Footy League to be asked if I'd be interested in being the senior coach. So
Riddle District is Sunbury, Diggers Rest.
Yeah, Melton, Wallen, Diggers Rest. We mentioned that. Yeah. Macedon.
Yep.
Woodend, sort of.
Yep.
So it's sort of... it picks up all the leagues anywhere from the sort of wedge between the Ballarat Footy League, the Western Footy League and the Northern Footy League.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of picks up most of the small towns, or with Sunbury and Melton, it's their second sides, and the top sides in those towns play in the Ballarat Footy League.
Ballarat League,
So I went there to coach.
How do you coach them? How do you coach an umpire, particularly if they haven't played?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, when we start with junior kids, the first few weeks it's just about blowing your whistles for marks, and then we move on to basic free kicks, head highs, in the backs, holding the man. They're the three key ones that we would teach a young umpire, and then really just getting him in the games. And they might shadow someone for a little while, and then start taking over themselves and start getting a bit of a feel for it themselves.
Yeah.
But coaching umpires is very much like coaching players. You look for deficiencies in the group or in the individual, and you try to rectify those.
Mm.
And so, umpire training consists of a bit of fitness, a bit of skill work, match simulation, whistles out on the field. And then maybe inside for a bit of coaching as well. A bit of whiteboard, a bit of PowerPoint, a bit of video examples.
It's
so
really just like a Monday to Friday at school, really.
Yeah.
Love a good PowerPoint.
Yeah.
You've got to stop telling people this stuff, mate. You're going to alienate the people around you again. I've told you about this.
Just to like while we're talking about the modern day at this point, we've talked about the bounce, maybe not your most ideal rule for you at the moment. Favourite rule as an umpire?
Oh, great question.
Favourite rule? Well, you do love paying the big holding the ball in front of the crowd.
Which one's your, but which one's your favourite? There's lots of different kinds of holding the ball.
The chase down.
You haven't celebrated or anything, right?
And the one that we love, the one we love as umpires is a holding the ball into an advantage. Because from a signal point of view, our listeners can't see this, but
I wish you could.
It's holding the ball.
He's on his feet
into the advantage.
So he's giving the advantage, as in the arm above the head and being pointed.
But it's the one motion
from east to down, west. Yeah,
it's just in one beautiful motion.
Down into the holding the ball, and then that same arm comes up and over the head from west to east to indicate that you're clear, mate.
And go. Yeah. And if you got really excited, another holding the ball back the other way.
And isn't it the case that if you transferred umpire control there, you'd say, and yours?
And yours.
I'll be honest, the question was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but that is the best answer I could have possibly imagined.
I suppose the other way is you must have a most hated rule then. There must be a rule that you just hate paying.
Mine is deliberate out of bounds.
Ooh, very topical at the moment.
Very topical.
Yeah. It's the worst rule in the book.
How so?
Because I believe it's the only rule that we as umpires have to get into the head of the player. So we are deciding what the player's intentions were, and we're guessing that because we don't know.
Are we wrong in understanding, as Kevin Sheedy suggested, that you have some sort of alien insight into the human mind and you can substantiate intent, can't you? I thought that was a skill of an umpire.
Well, look, and it's funny because, you know, the whole game is based on interpretation. I mean, I think we're the only sport that has this second document. So we've got a rule book like every sport has, but we have this second document called the Spirit of the Laws. It's a pamphlet. It's only a pamphlet. And
you read it while you're waiting for the doctor.
Yeah. And it directs how you actually interpret the rest of that book, and that's what makes it extremely difficult and probably the most difficult game to adjudicate in the world. Now we're lucky at local level that that 9 times out of 10 we won't pay deliberate out of bounds because the skill level of the players are not
in the same bracket.
So you can't assume that they've deliberately tried to do that.
Yeah, the ability to disguise, that kind of movement's difficult.
But AFL level, they have the best skills, and so they feel they've got a handle on that.
That word interpretation that you bring up, I think, is a really interesting one. I think you're absolutely right in what you've said, in that AFL, it's so difficult with so many. I didn't realise it was a second pamphlet. Rugby Union has, my father's was a referee in Rugby Union in the UK, and they have interpretations as sort of side notes within the law book. And there's sort of grey areas that you've got to sort of work out. I've had a bit of a look at this. There's not many other sports where you've got that volume of grey area, really. And the fact you've got a separate document, I think, is incredible.
Change week to week.
You look at the way soccer rules are written, like, it's very much, matter of fact. You either made contact with them or you didn't. You either made contact with the ball or you didn't. It either hit this or it didn't, even
really,
like,
evidence-based.
Exactly right. Even, like, the rule which we're going to talk about again in a minute, is because of the fact that if the ball hits a soccer referee, it's just written in, it's just play on. It's just play on, that's it. So there's no other rule around it. So if it goes in the goal, it's a goal. Okay, in rugby union, if it hits a referee, no matter what happens, they score out of it, no matter where the advantage went, they stop the game at that moment. Now, AFL is slightly different from what I understand because of what happened. Are they calling it the Eddie Betts rule? Is that the right description for it?
Well, I think it's one example of it where there's a... I think when it hits the field umpire, it's play on. Unless it's one particular umpire who felt like marking the ball on one day. I don't remember what his name was, that umpire. He marked the ball.
Oh, it was Peter Carey.
Peter Carey marked the ball, and he said, oh, I'm going to have to bounce it.
And the mark has been taken by umpire Carey.
That is I've never seen that.
Seen that when I was talking about off-air. Yeah. What happened in the Eddie Betts pre-season game?
Oh, it was, I'm not sure, I can't remember who Adelaide were playing, but the ball was kicked, it was clearly going through as a goal, ricocheted off the goal umpire into play, and under the current rules that occurred at the time, the umpire quite rightly indicated play on, and I don't know if it was rushed or something occurred, it didn't end up being a goal, and I think it was a week later, Michael, that the AFL changed the rule.
Yeah, so they essentially changed the rule that if it hits a goal umpire, then the common sense will prevail, that if it was clear that that ball would have gone through if the umpire wasn't in the way, then it would be given a goal or a behind or whatever that might be. Now, that's fantastic because the AFL have, score review, so they can look at it, but... people at local level.
Yeah. Poor bugger umpiring at Melton on a Saturday.
Well, the under-10's dad that's got, 7 kilos of lollies in his white jacket and a little bit of a paunch over the tool shed and can't get out of the way because he's fallen asleep leaning up against the post.
Has got to make a decision.
Yeah,
so it's
got to
be play on.
Yeah.
It's got to be play on at local level.
Which we did a bit of research on this, and a game in 1874, Carlton v Melbourne at Royal Park, a goal was, almost kicked, but it ricocheted off a small boy. So not the goal umpire, and of course, back then for our listeners, if you remember, that there wasn't really a line for a boundary. Of course, it was played in parks, and it ricocheted off the boy into play, and the player protested for a goal, and the umpire shook his head, and he, instead of kicking a goal, which would have been the right thing to do, he threw the ball away and walked off the ground. So I guess that leads in, has there been any bizarre moments like that for you on the field umpiring?
Oh, look.
I love that the player didn't get the rule and did the opposite of what was the practical thing to do.
Yeah,
he then left the field.
He wasn't in the pub the previous weekend.
No, Austin Longdon was his name.
Austin, lovely.
Had a few games called off for fog. Or snow. Up at King Lake.
Yeah.
Who are now in the Yarra Valley Mountain District Footy League, but were in the old Diamond Valley Footy League for some time.
Yeah.
We've had the odd dog, on the field. And
you've had a pig
on
the field.
No
yeah.
pig.
Elephant
on the
at some
field.
Stage as well, I think, at Arden Street.
But
any strange player behaviour that you just could, that you were baffled by? Yeah.
I remember a game actually at Melton where I wasn't umpire, but I was waiting to go out for the seniors, and in the reserves game, a bloke's king hit another bloke, and so you would think that at that point, when the whole team's after you, you just go off and protect yourself, but he wanted to take them all on.
Wow.
And so he's just swinging them and taking on 18 others, and he had to be escorted by his own team off the field.
We're quite fond of James Coventry's Time and Space book. Hello to James, who is a keen listener. I happened upon this story from Arden Street during the 1800s. 1896 is the game where a change had happened, and it was around the little mark that we talked about in our previous episode. And the little mark was a clear North Melbourne tactic. They were using it to try to be successful because they didn't have the skills to really pass the ball
as
long
well as
and wide. And Carlton had made great sides are copied and defeated at their own game. And this was what was sort of happening with, Carlton had done it in the 1870s and North Melbourne were trying to sort of have a renaissance for the little mark in the 1890s. So in 1896... umpires at this time had been told no matter what, there must be distance between the ball being kicked and the bloke marking it. Obviously, players from North Melbourne were still just sort of effectively throwing the ball after touching it on their boot to their teammates, and the umpires were pinging them for it. Of course, as it's written here, the North Melbourne cheer squad barrackers were furious and, in fact, ran onto the field and laid out the umpire. Just happened to be the case of playing Collingwood. And
controversial.
Not just because Collingwood were nice and saved the umpire. Bill Proudfoot, a player, happened to be a police officer, saved the guy's life, it sounds like.
Yeah.
I don't presume that this has happened to you, but how do you remain safe around the crazed nutcases of football? Because surely it's scary sometimes.
It is. I must say, I think it's got better. I think at community level, that Saturday football, you know, senior footy on open age footy, because players now get paid quite well on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah,
you know, the local inner eastern suburb teams, you know, players can be on, you know, up to $3,000 or $4,000 a game.
Yeah.
I think the on-field violence and even crowd behaviour has improved from what maybe the 80s and 90s did dish out. There's still an issue with junior football and parents.
Yeah, okay.
So it's the off-field.
Correct. It's the off-field, yeah.
So you're always safe, though, as an umpire? In your career, you've always felt safe?
No, not always. No, there's a couple of, you know, times I can remember, you know, being followed in a car after leaving a ground. And I'm not sure they were ever going to do anything except try to intimidate.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a friend of mine, a story goes, he was umpiring a game in a grand final.
Mm.
And a player has, the siren goes, player's got the mark about 40 metres out. I was under 15s. And so he's 40 metres out, needs a goal to win. It doesn't sit back on the tour, but the player on the mark, this after sign goes over the mark.
Oh, no.
So the umpire pays a 15-metre penalty in juniors back then.
Right, so it's a 25-metre kick all
kicks
of a sudden.
A goal, and so the umpire's walking off the ground, and a water boy, who was a father, just gives him the nice big punch to the guts.
No way.
Coming off. And so that was all dealt with. And my wife, who's a legal studies teacher, comes home about 5 years later and opens up the legal studies textbook, and there's the story as precedent of looking at sport and the law. So so there you go. I made a bit of a story. But those stories, they're much less than they used to be, I think. I think it has improved.
Is it the umpire's escort, the two blokes from the club, still walk you out and walk you back? That still exists?
Yeah,
the
umpire's
escort?
And I think at times that can be a little bit tokenistic because the escort's from the clubs and they're invested in it.
Yes.
And
they're usually quite a key official or someone very sensible.
But, I think it's got better over time.
What we started with, or from going on the tweet that Tor sent at the start of the episode, the holding the ball, which again is... has been contentious for so long, but we discussed the origins of why it came in, and it can be traced back to almost one person in Henry Harrison. That I just want to read out just a contradiction of Rule 8, 1866, is the ball may be taken in hand at any time, but not carried further than necessary to kick, which is fine. Then, and no player shall run with the ball unless he strikes it against the ground every 5 or 6 yards. So you can pick it up, but then you have to kick it. Or you can run a bit further and take a bounce. So there's a bit of a contradiction there. And I just wanted to alert our listeners to our current holding the ball rule.
Because you found a contradiction.
Yeah, rule 15.2.3.
Yeah.
And I'll... It goes between prior opportunity and non-prior opportunity, but I'll just focus on the on the non-prior.
Because prior opportunity is another one of those things where you have to interpret the intent of the individual, don't you?
So if there isn't prior opportunity, upon being correctly tackled, the player still has to correctly dispose of the ball. Now, if we go down to 15.2.4, the field umpire shall allow play to continue when a player's arms are pinned to the side by an opponent, which causes the player to drop the footy unless the player has prior opportunity. So now we have this case of, if you haven't had prior opportunity, you have to correctly dispose of the ball.
Yes.
But if your arms are pinned, you don't have to correctly dispose of the ball.
Which, what happens in the case? So, yeah, they are...
So, correctly tackled, that would be, I would assume, impossible in the heat of, you know, a scrimmage or battle, impossible to adjudicate, where, you know, you have to correctly dispose of the ball, but you are allowed to not correctly dispose of the ball if you're tackled in a specific way.
Yeah, demand answers, Finn.
In fact, at local footy, at community level, we pretty much say to clubs when they ask, if you haven't had prior opportunity, you can pretty much do whatever you want with it.
That's what I interpret from this.
Which means you can drop it, hold it, fumble it out of the tackle, and it's play on, or you'll go to a bounce.
Or you lean towards play on each time.
Yeah, right.
So this is where, you know, that little pamphlet comes into play. And again, I would argue we're one of the only sports that changes its interpretation based on the skill level of the game that you're umpiring. So if you're umpiring a game of basketball, travellers travel at under nines.
Because it's two steps.
Yeah.
And that's it, yes.
So we change our interpretation. So at under nines footy, prior opportunity is 17 bounces down the wing, forking six blokes, and then get tackled. And then we still give them time to dispose of it. Where at AFL, you get half a second. That's your prior opportunity. And we would even change interpretation within a division. So if I've got last versus second last on Saturday, they're going to get half a second more than if I've got the grand final, first versus second. Right. Because the skill level's better, so we expect more of that player. We know that they can get the ball out.
To me, that's fascinating. Just the fact you talk about skill level within players and you making that assessment, but your skill level as an umpire and having to come up with the most incredible judgment whilst I'm 18 Ks into my 20K and there's 4 points in this and I've got to make the toughest call from 35 yards away. I just think that's absolutely, that's incredible. Like the level of pressure that you guys are putting out, and still, you know, coming from a place where I come from, where every rugby union referee is called sir you know, curtsied to on the way off the ground, and you guys are getting bombarded with this. I don't know, maybe it's people don't understand the level of technicality that you're having to deal with, and this word interpretation. Sorry. Yeah, I just think it's unbelievable. Because of the yardages that you guys have to cover as well during a game.
And it sounds like you're in a position, if you're umpiring under 17s, to say you're old enough to know better.
Yeah, essentially that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so you talked about before about the distance of mark.
Yes.
You know, we've so at senior level we've extended it. So when I started umpiring, it was 10 metres, now it's 15. It's
15,
But at under nines, under the modified rules currently, it's one. So any mark is a mark
little
at
market.
Under nine.
So the little mark
still
is
exists.
Back
at nines and tens at most leagues under the AFL modified rules, which have only now just come in as a reaction really to soccer. Because, you know, there's a bit of a push that young kids now play soccer because it's safe and it's non-contact as such. Yep. And so the AFL needed to react to this, and so they've now created a bunch of other games. We've got AFL nines, we've got this modified version of most leagues that under nines and tens play under modified rules.
This has come up back to episode one that we did, the fact that the rules were changing week in, week out when we talk about 150 years ago. People these days seem really frightened about rule changes. I'd love to know from you what your view is on possible rule changes, but also what influences a rule change within the top level of sport all the way down to grassroots.
Well, look, I think there's a combination. I think most rule changes recently are around player safety.
Yep.
And then probably the flow of the game. The trap that the AFL at times fall into is that I'm not sure they always think far enough down the track of how that one slight rule change changes them.
Absolutely.
So I'll give you an example. About 5 years ago, there was a call that the game was too long.
Yeah.
420 minutes plus time. The average was getting out to 30 minutes a quarter. And so rather than shorten the quarters, which would have been the easiest thing to do, go to 18 minutes, the reaction was, well, we're going to get our boundary umpires to throw the ball in quicker and we're going to get our field umpires to throw it up quicker.
Right.
Great.
Round the ground, I would appreciate that, actually. But
no worries. So we do that, and they worked out. I think Adrian Anderson was the footy ops at the time, and he worked out that it was going to save us, you know, a minute 30 per quarter or something.
Yeah.
So that's great. Fantastic. So what do we do this year? Now we have to nominate our ruckman. So the boundary umpire now is instructed not to throw it in until the two umpires have been nominated and the field umpire gives him the signal. God. And we can't throw the ball up even if there's this massive melee, which used to be a bit of a get out of jail card. Just get it in the end, because we've got to nominate two ruckmen.
I see, so this ridiculous office situation where they go, and it's, so it's Daryl and Timothy. You're going, I'm not Timothy. He's Timothy. So hang on, who's going up here? You can be there for a long time.
This is the issue. So you know, for example, we allowed the player to kick the ball out without waiting for the behind flag to be waved to make the game quicker.
I'm fond of that rule.
But now we're
reducing the interchange to slow the game down. Mm. You know, so
I'm also fond of
that. Yeah, you know, so we just. But in terms of how then it filters down, one of the first rules in the laws of the game, one of the first rules in there says that the governing body may decide whether or not they take on the rules of the AFL rulebook. Yes. So every individual league...
The amateurs don't play the AFL rules, do they?
Well, you could argue any league doesn't play everything that's in the book. So currently AFL country, which is... all the leagues north of the fringe, south and west of the fringe, don't play deliberate point. So that is across. So if you go and play a game at Echuca tomorrow,
so you can rush it from
wherever you want, and there's no deliberate point. And so on and so forth. I think the AMOs are still doing 25 metre penalties and not 50, for example.
Mm.
So there's a lot. You know, every league now just has its own rule around those things, and then. Interpretations, of course, we spoke about change, and a prime example is hands in the back, which of course is not a rule. People say it's a rule. It's not a rule. No. It's just an interpretation. Yes. And at AFL, a push in the back is leaning one hand into the back. Yes. Now, if we apply that to local footy, there would be some quite larger reserves full forwards that would fall over because the only way they can stand up during a game is to lean against the wiry full back who's holding them up, because they're just a fraction overweight to what probably needs to be for that game. So we couldn't have that rule at local footy, that interpretation. So it's an interesting concept.
Michael, we have to thank you so much for coming in to visit us. You're our very first friend and interviewee who's had the time to come and meet with us football enthusiasts. We just can't thank you enough for how honest and valuable you've been with your time. Thank you very much, Michael, for joining us.
Thank you, gentlemen.